a rather unusual pastime of Srila Prabhupada, taking baths. Well, that's a very common, normal thing, at least for people in India and many other parts of Asia to do. In Thailand, Malaysia, people take bath daily. It's a normal thing to do. In this part of the world, to take bath daily is not a very common thing to do. But this was an unusual one. Srila Prabhupada was transiting in Bangkok Airport, Bangkok in Thailand. He had several hours stopover, so he decided to take a bath. And there wasn't any facility to take baths. Some time ago I was transiting at Heathrow, and there's no facility to take baths, and unless you pay like £25 or something to go in there. In the fancy waiting room. But northern. So Prabhupada went into the toilet. It's called a bathroom, but there's no bath. And there was a small sink. So Srila Prabhupada turned on the tap, removed his clothes, put on a gamcha, and with a small cup he took water from the tap and poured it over quite happily, making puddles on the floor. Then Shruta Kirti Prabhu, who was with him, gave him a towel, fresh clothes. And then the toilet attendant came, and he wasn't very happy because he'd have to clean it up. Actually, he should have been happy to have the opportunity to serve the great Paramahamsa, but he wasn't, and he was speaking loudly to Prabhupada and the assistant in Thai, which neither of them understood, and Prabhupada just laughed. Prabhupada said, "I had to bathe, I was feeling tired." So Srila Prabhupada, Shruta Kirti Prabhu commented that Srila Prabhupada would do something, or could do something very unusual, and he just do it as if it was completely normal. Now, that's not a particularly transcendental facet of Srila Prabhupada's personality, but because he is who he is, we are charmed to hear about it. On the other hand, Srila Prabhupada could do something very normal, and yet it would strike others as being something very special. In fact, everything that Srila Prabhupada did was very special, even if he picked his nose, which he sometimes did, or just walking, but it's not just in the case of Srila Prabhupada, because everything he did was imbued with concentrated Krishna consciousness. So everything about him is very special. One ordinary thing, drinking water. Now, commonly in India, people drink water without touching it, without touching the cup to the lips. A devotee who hadn't seen this before was astonished, because he described, "It was amazing because I had never seen anything done with such precision. It was a small thing, a tiny gesture, but there was something unique about it. I realized that anyone who could drink a glass of..." "Anyone who could drink a glass of water like that was not an ordinary person. Most people do ordinary things carelessly without thinking about them, yet somehow or other he always acted with full deliberation. It was, I guess, just a side effect of being Krishna conscious." And actually, yeah, even ordinary things like drinking, Srila Prabhupada would do it in such an aristocratic way. Clearly he was a person above the ordinary. Even if you don't know anything about Krishna consciousness, his mannerisms and everything he did was of a superior class of being. We may have heard of Srila Prabhupada's anger. Shutakirti Prabhu said at least once, I know he said it once, but probably he said it more than once, that Srila Prabhupada could get very angry, and it wasn't fun. It was heavy. It was Shutakirti and other surrendered servants would take it, but it wasn't that they were going to reject. There was no question in their mind of rejecting Srila Prabhupada or any such thing, but at the same time it was shaking, shattering, shocking. But then Shutakirti Prabhu, he, after explaining this, I'm paraphrasing it, said that now that Prabhupada's gone, I'd do anything to be back in that situation where I could be chastised by Prabhupada. Says even the most difficult experience with Srila Prabhupada is better than even the best experience in the material world without Prabhupada. That's the import of this. One incident. A boy, Srila Prabhupada would call his young men disciples boys. They may be 24, 25 years old. That was quite old at the time. When I joined Hare Krishna. If you need to sleep, please do it somewhere else. If you'd like to hear the class, I suggest that you stand up or at least don't lean against the wall. When I joined the movement, most of the devotees were 20, 21, 22, something like that. So in India, someone may be a man, what we would call a man or a young man, but they'd called a boy until they're married. That followed because in Sanskrit, the name Kumar goes with someone until they're married. Actually, they're supposed to be married much younger. So a boy, as Srila Prabhupada would call him, he was assigned to guard Srila Prabhupada's door. Otherwise, anyone can wander in, with so many people around, so anyone can wander in at any time, and Srila Prabhupada had many important things to do, so writing especially, and then administering his movement. And he also wanted some time to be alone for chanting and so many things. So there was a guard on his door, and Srila Prabhupada rang his bell, which is to call the guard, but the guard didn't come. Later when he came, Prabhupada severely chastised that boy for several minutes and until he was actually physically shaking. Srila Prabhupada is very heavy in that regard. There was another devotee present when Srila Prabhupada chastised him for this. And then Srila Prabhupada dismissed the errant supposed to be guard. And then Srila Prabhupada went on with his conversation with the other devotee. He'd been having a conversation, then the guard turned up. Prabhupada chastised him severely, and then he left. And then Prabhupada went on with his conversation with the other devotee, as if nothing had happened. In just a completely normal and calm mood. So the devotee who was with him noted that anger of Srila Prabhupada, it was real anger, but he wasn't overcome by the anger. That was actually for the rectification of the disciple rather than any common person, when they get angry, they just lose control. But Srila Prabhupada, he didn't lose control. He was completely in control of his mind, intelligence, and senses. Harinamanandadas, this is from the book Srila Prabhupada and his disciples in Germany, noted how Srila Prabhupada was expert in personal dealings. He relates that he traveled to various places where Srila Prabhupada was present. He's from Germany. He went to London, Paris, and Stockholm. And he said that, "I had opportunities to be with him, with Srila Prabhupada, in many circumstances, morning walks, lectures, room conversations, and public engagements. One thing that made a strong impression on me was Prabhupada's ability to adapt himself quickly and perfectly to a particular kind of person or audience. To me, it seemed mystical how he knew almost immediately where a person was at. On several occasions, he sensed right from the beginning where a conversation was leading and would answer questions even before they had been asked. Thus it happened that some of his guests would naturally stop questioning after a while and just listen, which is what you're supposed to do. Well, questioning is all right, but not that one comes in the presence of a spiritually advanced person and then you start talking and telling him what you want him to hear. Rather, we should listen to what he has to hear." So they would just listen, because they could see that Prabhupada was on their wavelength, addressing exactly the problems on their minds. Another thing that impressed me was that Prabhupada sometimes gave such simple answers that you became completely dumbfounded. You would ask yourself, "Why didn't I think of that myself? It's so clear." I actually burst into laughter once because Prabhupada's answer was so self-evident. Just to give one example of that, a devotee asked, "Why is Maya so strong?" And Srila Prabhupada immediately answered, "Because your determination is not strong." So, back to... Srila Prabhupada was expert also in dealing with audiences, going out in the public and lecturing. It's not that everyone's submissive like the disciples. Once in Australia, actually, Srila Prabhupada had to be taken from the meeting because it was becoming violent. There was a group of students who considered themselves to be Marxists, and they would hardly let Prabhupada lecture. You can see there's a video recording of that in which they're heckling Prabhupada, and they're actually extremely offensive. And eventually the devotees just took Prabhupada from there, because it seemed like they were going to... Actually, there was some violence, because one devotee took someone out the back and beat him up. In France, also in Paris, there was heckling from students. It was a very turbulent time. In 1968, it seemed there was going to be another French Revolution, because the students, they put a stranglehold on Paris for several days. It was like they were taking over. So there's a revolutionary spirit. And at a public meeting, devotees had set up a Vyasasan, and the students were very upset with that, because they had this idea, "Why should he sit on a high seat and we're on a low seat?" What rascals. What ignorant fools. They should be so happy to sit at the lotus feet of Srila Prabhupada. They wanted him to come down to their level. They thought he was on the same level. See, no culture. Whatever culture they have, just the opposite of any human culture. And they think this is advanced. So there were some times where I can think of those two occasions where the public were openly hostile. Of course, it may not have been everyone. Often in such situations, a few people cause enough disturbance to upset the whole program. In a program in a public park in Amsterdam, there was hippies, and some of them, and many of them were naked, most of them were intoxicated. And Srila Prabhupada, he didn't give any lecture, he just had kirtan. He said, these people, there's no use to lecture to them at all. Someone came up onto the stage, they started to come up on the stage as if to attack the devotees. And then Chakravarti, who's the Tamil president at Schloss Retheshof, which you've heard about from Bhadidhar, he just tackled that person and threw him on the ground right in front of everyone. And afterwards, Prabhupada chastised Chakravarti, said, you shouldn't have done that. They could have caused a riot. Because the people there were already hostile. Why? Just because they're just in such low consciousness. There's no reason for them to be hostile. It wasn't that the devotees were going around and whipping them or any such thing. But actually that man came around the next day to the temple. He was very impressed, actually, how the devotees had been so decisive. And he actually took up devotional service for some time. We often see that. I mean, I'm not recommending that we all learn karate or any such thing, although there's no harm if some devotees do. But we often see that. Then devotees go on Harinam and people think we're just a bunch of sissies, and then they attack us, and then there are always one or two devotees who are just waiting for that opportunity when someone will attack us so that they can show theirs, so they can show their skills and let out their pent-up violent feelings. In Berry Place Temple, being in such a location, it is quite common that people would come in drunk, violent, or just in other ways be obnoxious. And there was a devotee there, Yashoda Dulal. He was a pujari. He was also expert with nunchakas. You know what that is? There's one piece of wood, a chain, and another piece of wood. So, what's that called? I think it's nunchaka. Yeah, it sounds like a Japanese word. So he would just relish the opportunity whenever any obnoxious person would come in, and he could show that we can be more obnoxious. But actually, many people in this. In this might is right culture, they actually appreciate that. They think, oh, okay, very good. Anyway, getting back to the topic, Srila Prabhupada is expert in dealing with audiences. He would give the opportunity to ask questions. In Glasgow, famously, one man stood up. Glasgow, I don't know about now, probably still, but at that time, it was the most violent city in Britain, and proud of it, at least in Great Britain. And Belfast, when was it, 1968? The troubles began, something like that. So, but Glasgow, a very violent city. I had some experience before I joined the movement there. And one man, after a lecture, Srila Prabhupada took questions, and one man stood up and said, I am God. And Srila Prabhupada immediately responded, you are not God, you are dog. Now, that kind of response, you don't know how the audience would react. They might get all upset and start becoming riotous, but actually they all stood up and cheered Prabhupada. Tribhuvana said it was like the home team had scored a goal or something like that. Yeah. Another time in London, one man stood up and said, "Hey Swamiji, you said if we're not careful in the next life we'll become a dog. But I would want to tell you that I don't mind if I become a dog in my next life." And Prabhupada said, "You have my blessings." And the man sat down. There are all different ways in which Prabhupada responded. There was one, I believe it was in Mauritius. One, it often happens with among Indian audiences especially, that you ask for questions, and in the name of asking a question, someone gives a speech. And they go on and on and on and on. And Prabhupada let him, and he went on and on and on. And then Prabhupada said at one point, "Have you finished?" No, he went on and on further. And then again Prabhupada asked, "Have you finished?" And the man said, "Yes." And then Prabhupada said, "Okay, so just sit down." And then everyone cheered because he was just talking, you know, this kind of Mayavadi drivel in which Mayavadis have perfected the art, because they have nothing to say, because their whole philosophy comes to nothing anyway. They've perfected the art of, they can talk on and on and on, and at the end of it, you realize there's nothing that they've communicated. It's amazing, actually, how they do it. They talk in such a vague way. I was just listening to a lecture just now. Prabhupada said, this vagueness is sort of rascaldom. So when people go on and on, especially after Srila Prabhupada, every word he says is so clear. And people are getting upset, restless, because the man is going, and Prabhupada just said, "All right, now sit down." So in this way he defeated him, because there's nothing really to answer, because he didn't really say anything. But if Srila Prabhupada had cut him out earlier on, then people would say, "No, no, you should give him a chance to..." You know, they would think that Prabhupada was being unnecessarily impatient. But the man, by allowing him to go on and on speaking, Srila Prabhupada let the man reveal to everyone what an idiot he was, without Prabhupada having to directly tell him. Another famous incident, there was a TV show on British TV, I believe it was ITV, called Late Night Lineup. It's a typical kind of talk show in which the interviewer talks very quickly, and then the person is supposed to respond, and then the host is very snappy and tries to catch them out and this and that, and make the person who comes on appear like a fool. And they often bring in famous people, and then the whole idea is just to make a fool of them on TV, in public, on a live show. So Srila Prabhupada, in 1969, he was called on this late night lineup, which was a major preaching opportunity. So the interviewer, he started off saying, "Do you have a concept of hell in your religion?" And presumably he was ready to take Srila Prabhupada to task. That, well, if you say there's hell, how can you say there's God? And Prabhupada responded, "Yes, London is hell." And the man, he was caught at his own game. He didn't know what to say. He was just absolutely not expecting that. Here's this Indian, one of our slaves. He's come to our country, and he should be very grateful to be in this glorious country. And so we've brought him here, and he wants to speak something about religion. Ha ha ha! We'll show him. Ha 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 ha! And Prabhupada, in the first line, he just completely bewildered the man, which had never happened to him before. And then Prabhupada said, "Yes, of course, it's a very great credit to the English people that you developed such a great civilization in such a horrible place." He just completely finished him off. There's a similar incident in the Berry Place temple when Krishna Vesha, his young girl at the time, she's an old woman now, obviously. I met Achyutananda about 2 years ago in Alachua, and I told him that I've met several people in South India who tell me, oh, I remember Achyutananda Swami. He gave such great lectures. They remember him since they were... I said, I meet them, they're all old men, and they must have been young men at the time. And Achyutananda said, yeah, I'm an old man now. I was a young man at the time also. She asked Srila Prabhupada after a lecture in London, a Bhagavad Gita lecture. She said, is Bhagavad Gita spoken in hell? Strange question. Prabhupada answered that, yes, I'm here, I'm speaking Bhagavad Gita in London. When one young couple, they joined the movement, and they were initiated just 2 weeks after they met Prabhupada, and he married them at the same time. That was often Srila Prabhupada's policy, that if normal, it was unusual that married people would join, but it was not uncommon that young unmarried couples would join, and Prabhupada in the early days would get them married. The girl's father was from Texas, which is has a reputation of being a very macho kind of place. And when he heard that his daughter had joined some Indian cult and that she was going to get an Indian... No, she was initiated, and then 2 weeks after that they got married. So now she had an Indian name, and she was going to get married not in a church, but in some heathen ceremony. So he came to the wedding, and in front of so many people, he confronted Prabhupada, saying, "Why my daughter got an Indian name? What is all this?" And then Prabhupada looked at the father, and he looked at an Indian guest who was there, and smiling said, "Oh, you don't like Indians?" Put him on the spot. And then Prabhupada said, if you love her, you will like what she likes. So your daughter is happy, so why do you object? And he charmed the father, who ended up staying and taking prasad. Prabhupada was expert. All kinds of situations, especially going to a culture which he was not familiar with, and dealing with people whose mannerisms and thought patterns, what they consider, what they're good and what they consider bad, it differs in many ways from what Srila Prabhupada was used to. But Srila Prabhupada was expert in dealing with people in all kinds of situations. No one was able to stump him. That means to ask some question which he can't answer, or he's becomes confused, although many tried. So Srila Prabhupada in so many ways was expert. He was an absolutely pure devotee of Krishna. What can be said? What is his appeal? That's this series of talks is called The Attractiveness of Srila Prabhupada. Everything about him was attractive, to, well, especially to his disciples, who Krishna, within their hearts, they as they became purified, then Krishna gave them the ability to begin to appreciate his great pure devotee. He appeared to be old. Definitely he was not a young man, but he worked long. He worked. He was clearly working. He had a mission. He was busy. Yet he always appeared relaxed and as if he had time to do so many things. He would travel constantly and meet people, give lectures, deal with managerial issues, translate his books. And yet his disciples said, and then when you were with him, he didn't feel like he was all tensed up or anything. He was quite relaxed, and he had massage for several hours every day on doctor's advice. He said that my medicine, my diet, and massage, these three things, keep my body healthy. Hardly he seemed to get tired. He would just go on and on. His disciples would note, they would travel with him on a long flight, and they would be just totally jet-lagged, and Prabhupada didn't allow them to become jet-lagged. He said, I'm not. He would go on as if nothing had happened, and he expected his disciples who traveled with him to be like that also, but they weren't able to. He's seemed to be in an old body, but youthful in terms of his energy, his spirit, his optimism, his drive. His speaking was so simple, yet clear, through the piercing through all the coverings of the false ego and speaking directly to the soul, soul to soul. I call this, we've heard of heart-to-heart resuscitation. So this is soul-to-soul resuscitation. Here's a quotation from Tamal Krishna Goswami about Srila Prabhupada. How he came to Krishna consciousness. He writes, analyzing my own life, I could see that only by the impelling force of Srila Prabhupada's pure desire had I been induced to take to Krishna consciousness. True, I had been materially frustrated, such frustration being a suitable precondition for spiritual life. But it was Prabhupada, out of his causeless mercy, who had picked me up even though I was at first unwilling. Now, it wasn't just digressing or interrupting here what Tamal Krishna Maharaj wrote, that it wasn't that Tamal Krishna first of all met Srila Prabhupada, he met his disciples first. And most of Srila Prabhupada's disciples, in coming to Krishna consciousness, they met disciples of Srila Prabhupada before they met Srila Prabhupada. But Tamal Krishna Maharaj is saying here that it was Prabhupada's pure desire that was behind all of this. He writes, it was by his order, Srila Prabhupada's order, that the devotees had chanted in Tompkins Square Park the day I first met them. It was by his mercy that he had visited Morning Star Ranch, a visit that had left the people there chanting Hare Krishna. This Morning Star Ranch was a place where many hippie types lived. And before Tamal Krishna Maharaj had come there, Srila Prabhupada had visited there and induced everyone to chant Hare Krishna, which they went on doing even after Prabhupada left. They did that on a regular basis. And so when Tamal Krishna Maharaj, at that time not known by that name, when he went to live there for some time, then he also joined in the regular kirtans of the Hare Krishna mantra. Then he continues, Tamal Krishna Maharaj, it was because of his recording of the Maha Mantra, which I had sung along with because of his disciples' invitation, that I had come to the San Francisco temple And ultimately, it was his personal presence which had finally made me surrender. Another facet of Srila Prabhupada's monumental personality and contributions, that many devotees, they recount that when Prabhupada was speaking in his lecture, they felt that he was speaking to them personally and directly, which in a way he was. One devotee recalls, when Prabhupada gave a lecture, his eyes would wander over the audience while he explained Krishna consciousness. You felt that he was preaching directly to you. Another devotee comments on a similar feeling. Many have testified that they found Prabhupada looked at them and spoke especially to them in his lecture, even though they knew he was speaking to everyone else as well. Hare Krishna. So, I'll finish there for today, to be continued. Hare Krishna. Srila Prabhupada ki jai.